Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party Network, home to some amazing shows like Nerd Nuptial, Missing Frames, Time and Space, Aggressive Negotiations, dare I say Filibuster, and much more. And here on the A24 Project, every 2 weeks we look at two more movies distributed by A24. So, after taking a swerve in the road last week and interviewing actress Millie Shapiro, we are back this week to discuss Cut Bank and Ex Machina. So Dallas, how are you today? It's good to have you back.
I'm very well, and you know, I was absolutely fine giving up my spot last week for Millie Shapiro. I think it was a fantastic interview, and it's great to have someone of that caliber on the podcast. And also the t-shirt as well, the Hereditary t-shirt, which you can win by giving us a 5-star review. Oh, sorry, I mean any review on the podcast as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you'll see it in the show notes and on the at Join Nerd Party feed. So if you add a written review to sort of the A24 Project, you'll be put into the mix to win a t-shirt courtesy of our friends at Last Exit to Nowhere. It's a pretty funky t-shirt. I wish I could win it. Sadly, I can't jerry-rig this competition to win it myself. But if you're someone that already left an entry for the previous competition, we're going to include you in this one as well. So, you know, you have another chance at the prize. So this week, we've kind of got a bit of a quieter week sort of in the news front, and we've got kind of pretty two diverse films in terms of Cut Bank and Ex Machina. But in A24 Hour News, it's not really much to go on after episode 9, where we had about nearly 25 minutes worth of news. I struggled to scrape together much in the way of news at all. We sort of had the Berlin Film Festival, which sort of followed on a little bit from Sundance, but really sort of it's just a bit of news about kind of Ari Aster appropriately and his follow-up to Hereditary. So it's currently untitled, and it follows a young woman who reluctantly joins her boyfriend on a summer trip where things quickly go awry. It'll star Florence Pugh, Jack Rayner, who I absolutely loved in Sing Street, and it's not an A24 film, but I encourage people to go see it, and Will Poulter. So what's happened is this film is fully financed and produced and distributed in the US by A24, but the global rights have been eaten up at the European film market in Berlin this week, and it will be released by Entertainment One in the UK. So that'll be something to kind of look forward to. Ari Aster, Florence Pugh, Will Poulter, you know, they're exciting names on their own right. So I'm curious to see how you follow up something like Hereditary and what is going to go on right with this summer trip.
I know, yeah, well, it's a fantastic cast at the moment, and I think it will only get better. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see which direction he goes in, but I thought he was his Hereditary. I mean, I've both said many, many times on both of these sort of podcasts how what we thought of it and how great it is. And he's an exciting filmmaker one of those ones, but you're basically, it doesn't matter what he serves up, I will be interested in seeing it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's a quiet week this week, but I'm sure no doubt things will explode in 2 weeks' time when we're kind of returned again. We'll have the Glasgow Film Festival.
Well, there is the news that Bo Burnham took the Writers Guild Award for 8th Grade. Apparently quite a bit of a left field. Well, of course, you can't comment because we haven't seen it, but, you know, it's nice to see some recognition go their way, because this was the Writers Guild. Well, didn't get an Oscar nomination, but apparently he did say have fun at the Oscars, losers.
Yeah.
In a tongue-in-cheek speech. So but I mean, it's great to see it picking up some awards. It's got its last chance along with the likes of Hereditary or whatever. We've got the Independent Spirit Awards, I think they're Saturday the 23rd or 22nd of February, so that's the last hurrah for the A24 crew, apart from Paul Schrader with his Solitary First Reformed Best Original Screenplay nomination. So we'll be next year they should invite us to cover the Independent Spirit Awards, I think, because I mean given the number of A24 films there this year, I mean it'll probably be a clean sweep next year.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're not willing to send us candles at A24, please feel free to send us to cover your movies at the Independent Spirit Awards. It would be greatly appreciated, the free trip. And then obviously we've kind of got the Glasgow Film Festival. It launches on Wednesday as of recording, but it'll be a week behind us at this point by the time this episode drops. So there'll be a few A24 movies there that we'll kind of be able to maybe talk about a little bit in a few weeks' time. And hopefully we'll nab Bo Burnham for an interview. So fingers crossed, some good luck comes our way.
We'll try and get him on the red carpet. We'll try and get a one-to-one interview. But if in doubt, I could always ask a two-part question or maybe a comment more than a question during the Q&A.
People will love that, Dallas, and I think you'll do it really well. I'm sure you'll feel like an Iron Brew whack off the back of your head. So we may not have seen Eighth Grade, but we have seen Cut Bank and Ex Machina. So two pretty different movies. And I suppose when we kind of started this podcast, that if someone asks you to make a list of A24 movies, you could probably knock out a good list of 10 or so. You know, your Lady Birds, your aforementioned or Ex Machina. But there's plenty of movies in there, especially in these sort of early years, where a Cut Bank, where I've never seen of it, I have heard the title, but very little else. So it's kind of exciting to do this podcast sometimes where we get an opportunity to look into sort of A24's back catalogue. And Cut Bank is one of them, which is definitely a first-time watch for me. And it tells the story of Dwayne, who dreams about escaping his small-town life in Cut Bank, Montana, dubbed the coldest spot in the nation, with his girlfriend, Cassandra. So when Dwayne witnesses an awful crime, he tries to leverage a bad situation into a scheme to get rich quickly, but he finds that fate and an unruly accomplice are working against him. Thrust into the middle of a police investigation, spearheaded by a local sheriff, everything goes from bad to worse. And with a cast of Liam Hemsworth, Bruce Dern, Billy Bob Thornton, John Malkovich and Michael Stuhlbarg, the film only has a 35% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So something isn't going right here with an amazing cast like this and a critical reception like this. Even has a 22% audience rating, which is very rare that it'd be lower than a critic's rating. So Dallas, did this film kind of work for you? What was your first time watching it? And where has this film potentially gone wrong with a critical response like that?
Cut Bank? Unfortunately, it didn't cut the mustard for me. Ho-ho. Yeah, it's one which I had never seen, never heard of before this project. It was, I guess I should have known when I found it very difficult to get a hold of on DVD, and the last one that we had like that was Revenge of the Green Dragons. So I don't think it ever had a UK cinema release. But I mean, when it first started out, I was wondering if it was sort of going for like a Hell or High Water vibe, sort of rural, sort of small town America, you know, you've got the sheriffs and, you know, this guy who accidentally films the murder of a postal service officer and then wants to try and cash in on a potential reward, but everything's not quite as what it seems. And I wasn't really engaged with it at all, really. Well, until about sort of 20 minutes in, when Michael Stuhlbarg's Derby Milton turns up and the film starts to take a slightly different direction. You've got this one story, like you say, where Liam Hemsworth's character is trying to get money to get out of town to escape the small town America. But it turns out that when this guy kills a postman and steals the postal truck, in it is a blue lunchbox, which was due to be delivered to Derby Milton, who essentially is an Ed Gein-esque person, very socially awkward, you know, does taxidermy in his basement and stuff like that. So he is looking for his parcel and he gets drawn into this sort of grand mix of schemes, and it starts to go down a slightly different route to where the lead character Dwayne especially wants it to. But unfortunately, it just wasn't really all that engaging, which is, like you say, very difficult to understand when you've got a cast of, you know, supporting characters like John Malkovich, Billy Bob Thornton, Bruce Dern, stuff like this. And, you know, I was looking at it on the IMDb for the trivia, and it says that, you know, this film was apparently on the blacklist in 2009, which is like the annual sort of review of unmade scripts. So I don't know where it went wrong or if the script has changed since the thing, but it just wasn't really all that enthralling or enticing. And, you know, the performances weren't great overall. I mean, I thought Teresa Palmer was clearly playing, you know, this sort of small town sort of hit girl who wants to be in the sort of beauty pageant and stuff like that, but she was either doing a complete parody of it or I just thought she was not very good at all. And unfortunately, Liam Hemsworth is not really in the same level as his brother Chris, unfortunately. What did you think of it?
Yeah, the alarm went off pretty early on for me before I even sort of watched the film. So I rented it from Amazon Prime, put a couple quid in there. Yeah, I'll give it a go. Interesting cast. And then I had a wee check on Letterboxd. And if you kind of search for most kind of A24 movies, you know, you're sort of the people, the ones that we all know, the Spring Breakers, Ex Machina, Lady Birds, whatever. You know, I follow about maybe 200 odd people on there, and probably most of them will have watched these A24 movies. But when I searched for this one, one person had. And it was very much similar to sort of Revenge of the Green Dragons. It was like, A24 people love these films, tend to check them out. You know, the name alone's enough to get people to go, especially kind of nowadays, more less so than sort of 2015. One person's watched that. This is a bit concerning. And then I kind of started watching it, and then, you know, you have this sort of shooting early on, and you think, okay, this is kind of interesting. It's kind of started on this, you know, strong foot. But then it just sort of became quite boring, and I never sort of got into sort of the whole plot, or I was kind of looking at these performances just very confused about how did all these people get convinced to star in this movie. You know, it's, you know, the Derby Milton character is sort of so cliched from kind of really everything about the character. There was nothing there. Liam Hemsworth has no screen presence at all in this movie. I mean, it's just like Billy Bob Thornton vanishes off for most of the film, the same with John Malkovich. It just has nothing remotely going for it at all, and I was clock watching really early doors. I was like, oh, this film is not great at all.
It's a bad sign when you're clock watching in a film that is only 90 minutes long. That is always a bad sign. I mean, the Billy Bob Thornton thing, not to get into spoilers too much, but essentially he's sort of like, I thought he was killed. I don't know if this was the same thing for you. I thought he was killed, but then he sort of turns up that he was just really knocked unconscious or something, but his eyes were open the entire time, and then he turns out he turns up at the end with a bandage around his head, and he's like, oh, he's absolutely fine from being knocked out and tied up or something. I'm like, what? He was like in that van for like days. I'm like, that made no sense. But you know, for me, the only one who really sort of got a passing sort of grade was Michael Stolberg. And you know, if nothing else, this film is the same as Call Me By Your Name, in that the film is completely stolen by a monologue from Michael Stolberg while sitting down talking to a young man. You know, you know, the sort of thing about him sort of learning how to hunt and stuff, that sort of loss of innocence that he sort of has, that sort of is meant to try and explain his motives and stuff like that towards the end of the film. I thought that was a great scene, and so I totally was sort of drawn into him just through his performance in that. But the rest of it, unfortunately, no, it was a bit of a bust for me.
Yeah, it's just one of these movies that, you know, sometimes with a project you get a bit of a hit or miss. I mean, I remember sort of when we did Revenge of the Green Dragons, we did that, and then immediately follows up by something like a real success with something like A Most Violent Year, and you know, this and Ex Machina are an interesting pairing of quality. But yeah, it was just a film that left really no impact whatsoever, and yeah, it's just I can't see potentially what maybe inspired A24 to spend money on this one at this point. I mean, I can see the appeal of the cast. It maybe feels like a bit of a bargain basement Coen film. It pretty much had a limited cinema release in the most limited sense of the way, but it went straight to kind of VOD, and it just seems like, okay, I don't understand why someone would pay money to distribute this film. And you know, I almost, when you look at the Amazon artwork, if you rent this, it looks like it's a big explosion. Oh my god, this is an action movie, there's guns. And it's like, you watch film, it's like, okay, I mean, it doesn't even look that cold either. I mean, it's the big selling point of this movie is like, it's one of the coldest places. Oh my god, the drama. It's like,
yeah, okay, I don't know if like, that was meant to be like a Fargo type thing, you know, because Fargo was set in that sort of area, and you know, was always covered in snow. Yeah, there was no plot references whatsoever to the fact that this was the coldest place, you know, in the US. And apparently, you know, on IMDb, it said that this film took 2 years to make. They were filming this over 2 years. I don't even know how that's possible. Most films, like, for something that's only 90 minutes long, that should have been banged out in about sort of 2 to 3 months most. How that took 2 years to do, I have no idea. But it's certainly, you know, I don't know if he was wanting to take his time to make the best film possible, but it certainly was not the film that we watched.
Yeah, like, I watched a film recently, it was absolutely beautiful, the South Korean film Burning, and there's a scene where they're sitting out there, they're enjoying kind of some drinks and smoking some weed, and they could only shoot like 5 minutes at a time of this scene over a period of time, just due to kind of the lighting. They wanted to get as natural as possible, and you think, oh wow, they put into a lot of effort to create this small scene, and it shows on the screen. Like, if you ask someone, this film took 2 years to make, you'd be wondering what the hell was going on, whether it was ineptitude, bad planning. I absolutely have no idea why it took this long to make it. And it's none of it shows at all.
No, I think this one will probably end up near the bottom tier of the project by the time we're done. It's certainly down there with Revenge of the Green Dragons for me so far, anyway.
But hey, we're about to have a massive upswing with to go to one of A24's finest finest movies, and that's Ex Machina, written and directed by Alex Garland. So for those who aren't familiar with it, Caleb, a 26-year-old programmer played by Domhnall Gleeson at the world's largest internet company, wins a competition to spend a week on a private mountain retreat belonging to Nathan, played by Oscar Isaac, the reclusive CEO of the company. But when Caleb arrives at a remote location, he finds that he will have to participate in a strange and fascinating experiment in which he must interact with the world's first true artificial intelligence housed inside the body of a beautiful robot girl, played by Alicia Vikander. So, Dallas, Ex Machina is one of the most popular A24 movies. When did you first see it, and was it love at first sight for you?
I think I probably saw it opening weekend. I think back when I saw it, I wasn't familiar with A24, but I was certainly familiar with Film 4. I think this is probably the second Film 4 A24, I want to say collaboration, but, you know, after Under the Skin. And, you know, I think it was the trailer that sold it to me. I mean, Alex Garland I was familiar with as a writer from 28 Days Later and also The Beach novel as well, but there was just something about the look of this film which it was the look of the film and the story that intrigued me, because back then wasn't really familiar with the actors either. You know, Domhnall Gleeson would have been best known for a very small part in Harry Potter and being Brendan Gleeson's son, and Oscar Isaac, I think, was just starting to learn about him through A Most Violent Year, which we did a couple of episodes ago, and Inside Llewyn Davis and Alicia Vikander. I think this was probably the first thing that I'd seen her in, even though she had sort of small roles in the likes of Son of a Gun as well and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I was completely blown away by this film. I just thought it was fantastic. And not only the writing, you know, it's almost it's essentially just a three-hander. You know, there's just three people involved in this, really. And the effects are just fantastic. And, you know, it won Best Visual Effects at the Oscars over Force Awakens, the other science fiction film that year that stars Domhnall Gleeson and Oscar Isaac. But for me, I thought, yeah, these effects were just absolutely astounding. I thought it was just, yeah, no, it's one of the best so far that we've seen, easily, hands down. What about yourself?
Yeah, I saw this one opening weekend as well, and I was really excited going in, sort of Alex Garland. Oscar Isaac's I'd really taken to in My Most Violent Year, so I was excited to see what he would do next. And while it wasn't a kind of A24 release here, it was had funding from kind of Film 4 and DNA Films, which kind of attracted me as well. So there was a lot that kind of appealed to me, and I thought they had a really good kind of trailer campaign, and there was a really impressive buzz coming out of this movie, especially for something like kind of South by Southwest. And I just thought it was, you know, original kind of sci-fi film. So I was really excited to go along. And I remember really liking it kind of that first kind of screening, and then catching it maybe a kind of year or so later when the Blu-ray was like £6 or something like that. And I think it's definitely one of A24's, you know, great films. And, you know, it does, as you say, have a small cast. I mean, it's got the three main leads and someone that says congratulations in the beginning of the film to Domhnall Gleeson's character. But I think it's so interesting, because I've watched this maybe kind of three or four times now, and I've always enjoyed sort of the debates and the performances. There's just so much kind of going on with this film about you know, on a technical level, on an acting level, on a kind of philosophical level, the film has really got it all. Alex Garland has really made a fantastic film here.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the success of the film is, it's a huge, you know, down to him. You know, the screenplay was nominated for the BAFTAs and Oscars as well for best original screenplay, and it was absolutely was one of the best screenplays of that year. You know, he was nominated for best British debut, outstanding debut at the BAFTAs, and you know, he gets such fantastic performances out of it. I mean, you got to think this was apparently his first feature film, and to get this sort of level of intensity and performances out of it, you know, Oscar Isaac apparently sort of played the role of Nathan as sort of a cross between the chess player Bobby Fischer and Stanley Kubrick, which is why he's sort of gone with the beard he's got in that particular film. Sort of these sort of reclusive withdrawn geniuses and stuff like that. Domhnall Gleeson, I think, is an incredibly underrated actor. I think he's fantastic, whether it's, you know, in something like this, or, you know, a lot of people don't seem to like him in the Star Wars movies. You know, he goes a bit maybe theatrically over the top, but I think that's kind of what you need from, you know, the sort of stiff upper lip British villains in those kind of films. I think it's great. But, you know, something like, what was it? Goodbye Christopher Robin is A.A. Milne. I thought he was fantastic in that film, and he was great here. And they all, the chemistry the three of them have is just fantastic. And, you know, Alicia Vikander's fantastic in this, and deservedly was nominated for a BAFTA for it as well. And, you know, it's almost like a sort of modern day Frankenstein or sort of Prometheus story, you know, the warnings of, you know, can we really control AI if, you know, if we do build it and we do get to that stage, you know. I think Garland said that he wanted this film was basically set 10 minutes in the future, in that it's kind of plausible, but sort of not plausible. But it's like if Apple or Google announced tomorrow that it created an AI, you'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, I can see that. Yeah. So that's what he was kind of going for. And yeah, no, it's totally believable. And I mean, the location as well certainly adds a lot to it. Apparently it was set in some very sort of high-end boutique Norwegian hotel, the kind of place that I would absolutely love to go to, even though it doesn't have any windows. But, well, certainly in the rooms anyway, but I think it was just all fantastic. And, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff around the Turing test that keeps getting mentioned. You know, basically the Caleb's role in all this is to test whether or not the Turing test was decide whether or not the computer was capable of artificial intelligence. But the problem I think that Caleb and Nathan find is that they were too, because they know that Ava is a computer, that they spent so much time thinking about that they forgot they were actually playing chess, and she actually checkmates both of them in the end. You know, not wanting to get into spoilers too much, although we could go into spoilers, I guess, you know, but to the ending and stuff like that. But I thought that, yeah, it was just a great ending. And, you know, if nothing else, it gave us the meme. You know, this is probably one of the very first A24 films to give us the meme with the Twitter dance, where you could basically put any song on top of the dance sequence and it was totally works.
Yeah, 100%. Like, that scene, I remember coming out of it and it was like, someone went, what was your favourite scene? And it was definitely the dance one, because I love Oscar Isaacs in this movie. He is, like, as Nathan, he, you watch it and he's got that weird sort of, like, you're very aware this guy is probably one of the richest people on the planet, an absolute genius, and he's so kind of relaxed about it, you know, this, yeah, have a beer and stuff like that. It kind of disarms you quite easily that he is a... you know, he is this rich genius. You know, you almost can take him for granted when you sort of how he behaves and kind of shrubs around, really. And I just love that dance sequence, like, when he's like, oh, yeah. Oh, I can't remember how it is exactly the same, but yeah, I want to cut some fucking dance moves. And he's like, just starts cutting away. And it's just such a great moment.
Yeah, I mean, the choreography between Oscar Isaac and the actress there, they are so in sync that at that point I was thinking, right, well, is she a robot? Or is he a robot? Maybe they're both robots. Because otherwise, how would they know exactly how to do that? So it got you thinking, whatever, because at some point, Caleb also starts to wonder if he is who he thinks he is, and is he actually been programmed by Nathan, because he is being programmed by Nathan in certain respects, because like you say, you know, he is this amazing genius, but he, the way he acts at certain times by sort of getting drunk and just wanting to have a beer and stuff like that, but he is always in control. He always thinks he's in control of what's going on, and Nathan is just a pawn in this game, going back to the chess theme again, I guess. So yeah, it's just a masterful performance by him, and it was one that really sort of put him on the map for me.
Yeah, I thought Caleb was going to be a robot at one point. It's the scene where he's sort of like looking in the kind of the mirror and kind of, you know, cutting at his skin, and I can imagine sort of an environment that sort of Nathan has created would make you sort of feel on edge, like, wait, what am I doing here? You know, you've got the drink, you don't have a, you know, you're not going out, you know, Ava is so lifelike and you know, human to an extent. It would make you kind of doubt yourself, even though you know you're human. It kind of plays into that kind of mind, and it really is that kind of great game of chess that everyone's kind of playing with each other.
Yeah, and you know, the revelation sort of later on that basically Ava was designed specifically for Caleb, in terms of, you know, by, you know, Nathan admits that he basically hacks into the phones to basically, and camera phones, in order to get facial recognitions and how people speak. And so he's basically got Caleb's entire history, including his porn history, of what sort of people he likes to watch porn of and stuff like that, to basically build the perfect robot for him in order to get the result that he wants. So
yeah, I think it's such a kind of, for me, I really love like the performances from this movie. Is like any kind of, it plays with some interesting ideas, and you know, what is it to be human and robots, you know, we've seen all these sorts of things before, but these are such three well engaging characters, and like if one of them fails in their role and performance, this whole kind of film completely falls apart. And like, I think, you know, Ava, you know, played by Alicia Vikander, you know, as we said, she wasn't someone we were incredibly familiar with at all, and I knew she was in Son of a Gun because I'd seen it, but she doesn't really do much in there that anyone, other actress, could have done. So to kind of go from that to this in such a short period of time is quite incredible. I mean, you can see why her, you know, after this movie, she started to become a name linked with absolutely everything, and you can certainly see why.
Oh yeah, I think after the year after this sort of came out, she was almost in every single film that came out for a while. I think, what was it, like Testament of Youth, The Danish Girl, Light Between Oceans and stuff like that. There didn't seem to be a month go by when I was working at the Belmont where there wasn't a new Alicia Vikander movie. I think it was like her and Matthew Schoenaerts. One of them was in basically every single film coming out this year. And I mean, this was a film which, you know, on paper, you know, it's science fiction, it's slightly theatrical, but this was released like at the end of January in the UK. So this was, you know, Film 4 and A24, they recognised the potential in this film. And like, you know, it got nominated for the right awards, it got nominated for BAFTAs, got nominated for Oscars and stuff like that. So they knew that they had something special on their hands. And it was great to see audiences sort of take to it as well.
With like, so obviously Alex Garland, he co-wrote, you know, Dread, and then we have Ex Machina, and then Annihilation that you love. What is it kind of for you that Alex Garland does so well with sci-fi?
I think what it is also with like 20 Days Later is he doesn't do fantasy. All of his science fiction is grounded in reality, even to a certain respect. Sort of like Judge Dredd, the sort of the physicality of it and the physics of what, you know, what is it? You could see, you know, a future where, yeah, there's martial law and whatever, and everyone's judged, and the technology and stuff is all, it's sort of recognizable, but just taken to that next slight advanced level. And so that's what, you know, with Ex Machina here, it's science fiction, but it's not unbelievable. You could see us getting to this point at some time in the near future, and you know, that's potentially rather frightening, but also, you know, some people will see it as a great thing, some people will think it's the most terrifying thing in the world, that, you know, robots will be living among us and, you know, potentially taking over Terminator style. So Annihilation is slightly more fantastical, but I just think it's such an underrated film, and I really hope that he doesn't take what happened with the distribution of that in America and the UK too harshly, because I would love to see, I'd maybe like to see him, you know, maybe try a different genre and see what he can bring to non-science fiction. But, you know, if he did science fiction for the rest of his career, I'd be a happy man.
Yeah, and it's so good to get directors, like we kind of spoke earlier on another podcast, where, you know, you have Christopher Nolan, brilliant catalogue of work, has done this one kind of sci-fi movie, where Alex Garland, you know, he, out of nowhere, really, he's sort of dived in sort of this sci-fi genre, and he's, you know, he's got three brilliant movies to his name in that genre kind of alone. And it's good to have a director that is really kind of flying the flag for that. And I'm the same as you, I hope kind of the Annihilation experience hasn't kind of ruined it for him.
Yeah, no, I think he will bounce back, because, you know, it may not have been seen by a huge audience, and Paramount, essentially, from what I gather, just didn't really get it or understand it. But I think people did see it. Certainly in the UK, there was a huge campaign. I know, I think it was Edith Bowman managed to get like a couple of screenings in the UK when there was not meant to be any single screenings. And they managed to get like a few Q&As going and stuff like that. And it got a real groundswell of support. And it's been thought of really highly by certain people. So I think, you know, hopefully he doesn't have to go and dip his toe into the world of, well, I say not get the offer to do like a Marvel movie or like a franchise film. But I think given what happened with Paramount, he probably would avoid dealings with any franchises. And I think he... You mean considering what he's managed to do with his own original screenplays and adapted screenplays, because Annihilation was written, was previously a book, I think he'd be happy to do his own stuff, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I can't see him probably going to sort of the Marvel fold. I see him as someone that will take the money that he's been given and keep making the movies he wants to make, whether they're kind of big or small. And, you know, Annihilation might have been, you know, kind of jilted by sort of Paramount, but I think when you look at sort of so many end of year lists from kind of prominent critics, and I think it's one of those movies that people will have kind of missed out on in 2018, and then years later we'll look back and go, that was an absolute Stonewall classic, perhaps like they did with Ex Machina. I mean, it didn't really make much of a kind of impact at the cinema, but the people that saw it loved it, and then more people kind of cottoned onto it when the DVDs and Blu-rays were like, yeah, no, a disposable sort of £6, when it landed on sort of streaming services, when things like Star Wars comes along and you've got kind of two of the big actors from that, you know, that are relative unknowns to probably the people that see Star Wars, and they're like, oh, I'll kind of check out what they've been in. Well, they're both conveniently in one film. Let's kind of check that out. I think like something like that can only go further.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at IMDb here, and I remember that they were hopefully wanting to move ahead with a Dread Mega City 1 sort of TV series, and I would be interested to see if, because I know Carl Urban was wanting to come back for that TV series, I'd be interested to see maybe Alex Garland, if he'd be interested in taking on like the showrunner role in something like that, and maybe sort of script and direct a few episodes of that series, because, you know, for me, I think Dread came out, unfortunately, just after I'd seen The Raid, which essentially was the same film in that someone has to get from the top, from the bottom of a building up to the top of a building to get a criminal. And for me, The Raid was one of the finest action films of the last decade, and Dread couldn't quite live up to that. But if I'd seen Dread first, or I'd never seen The Raid, I think I really would have appreciated it a lot more. So I'd be keen to dip back into that world, and if Alex Garland was back, took the reins of that, I think it'd be something really special.
Absolutely. So have you got any kind of final thoughts on Ex Machina?
I mean, Ex Machina is, yeah, it's definitely top tier A24 for me at the moment, and I think, yeah, I mean, that it's given us that dance meme, which means it's always going to be beloved for that. But, you know, it's one of the sort of finest sort of original science fiction films we've had over the last few years, even though it's taken notes. I've got in my notes here Close Encounters motif. I think there was one point when Alicia Vikander's character is first introduced that if you listen really carefully, you can almost, the notes of music being played are very similar to the ones from Close Encounters. So I don't know if that was a deliberate nod, or whether it was just something that came up. But I really like that sort of wee twist and nod to the outer world of sci-fi there.
I noticed as well that at the end credits that they have to give a special thanks in the music section to Ghostbusters. Even though they don't play the music, they have to give credit to them. Yeah.
Oh, right, yes, because of the... Okay. So I was just going to ask what your final thoughts on the film were.
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting one. I suppose we can go back to what someone kind of reviewed of us, saying that we're sort of entering the golden era of A24. I mean, certainly not the case with Cut Bank, but Ex Machina, you know, While We're Young, you know, 2015 is off to a really good start. Son of the Gun is fine, Cut Bank is terrible, but it's going to be kind of interesting sort of, and then 2015 seems I think it's the most diverse kind of year perhaps for A24, from sort of highs and lows. It's a bit all over the place. They don't really have that kind of consistency down, but I think sort of Cut Bank and Ex Machina show that they're still making some amazing choices, but some other ones where it's like, yeah, you don't need to make those kind of choices now that they've kind of reached the kind of prominence they have. I don't think a Cut Bank would have made the grade in 2018.
No, I think, yeah, like you say, they're still sort of finding their feet, but also their output is growing now, because, yeah, sort of 2015, you're now up to 1, 2, 3. So 11 films sort of being released in 2015. So, you know, the output is increasing. So, you know, the more films you get, you know, the more chance you're going to have some great ones. But, you know, for every, like you say, for every Ex Machina you're going to get, there's a chance you're going to get something like a Cut Bank. They can't all be solid gold, or they can't all be moonlights, Oscar-winning moonlights, but you've got to take the rough with the smooth. But, like you say, between While We're Young and Ex Machina, 2015 is off to a very good start, certainly for A24.
Absolutely. So next week we're going to come back, well, 2 weeks' time, we'll be back with Barely Lethal and Slow West. Do you have you seen either of these before?
I have not seen Barely Lethal, but I have seen Slow West, a film which was ruined for me. Well, not ruined for me, but unfortunately I'm going to ruin it for everyone else now, in the fact that basically I can only think of the title by having the Pet Shop Boys song Go West in my head. So it's Slow
West!
Well,
I have not seen it. I have not seen it, and now you've already ruined it for me. I thought, oh my god, I'm going to get a spoiler here, but I've not seen it yet. I kind of tell Dallas to stop? And in fact, you've done something much worse.
Yeah, no, it's just going to be in your head. Whenever you're thinking about it, you're going to have the Pet Shop Boys in there.
Well, hopefully you'll all join us in a couple weeks, where we'll review Barely Lethal and Slow West. So, you know, if people want to reach out to you and talk about where Cut Bank is actually a misunderstood piece of genius and the Coen brothers would be proud of it, where could people find you, Dallas?
They can find me on Twitter at @champcelluloid, and where can I get you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @Lee_Nostromo. So thank you very much again for everyone that's been tuning in, listening. And as I say, if you can leave us a review, you'll find your name in the mix for a pretty awesome t-shirt. So you've got until the 25th of March, so plenty of time. But, you know, don't wait. Get your review in and check it out. So thank you very much to everyone for listening. And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time for Barely Lethal and Slow West. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.